Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 108, part 2, or 109, however you want to look at it, is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, we just finished part 1, episode 108.
Again, giving away trade secrets.
But and yes. Yeah, so I mean, we're open. If nothing else, we're like an open book, and that's kind of what makes us individually and as a clinic. We were talking about the recent departure of our family beloved pet Sadie.
Well, you missed our weather update. So today, when we're recording this, it's beautiful outside.
Well, I was recapping last week.
It's being produced. It's going to be even more beautiful outside.
It's going to be hotter.
79, partly sunny.
Okay.
Beautiful. In here in Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Okay. Nice. So, we, at the recording of this episode, quote unquote, next week, we will have had our meeting and be coming back from beautiful, hot Las Vegas, Nevada, where our VMG meetings have started back up. And so I'm super excited to have seen my colleagues. So it's kind of weird. I'm not going to go there. I'm super excited.
Don't talk in past tense like that. That's weird.
I'm super excited to see my VMG mates, as I call them, catch up with them, see what's going on in their personal life and their business life, hopefully get some good information from them. But really just to kind of have that fellowship experience and then also to somewhat on my end take a break from work, because we all in all of our clinics have been really, really working extremely hard and sometimes under stress, sometimes not during this whole pandemic. And I think we're all very much looking towards opening the doors up in the hopefully not
very near future.
Yeah, the not too distant future.
But as you mentioned, right, so the VMG meetings have commenced.
Yep.
A lot of the veterinary industry meetings will commence in person as well, or as a joined effort virtually and in person. So I know like East Coast is coming up. I know Western is going to happen. I know there's this new one I saw called Southern Vet Conference, or SVC. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
It's in August. And then there is, what is the one in October by the GVMA?
South something, yeah.
Yeah.
At the Avalon.
Yeah. Anyways, there's a lot of meetings.
AHA's coming up.
Les
Meadowcroft,
of Vetovations.
Founder, owner of Vetovations, sent me something. I was thinking about this morning. A month or two ago, that he is sponsoring, or he is a major sponsor at one of the minimal invasive surgery conferences. I don't remember where that's at. Baltimore comes to mind, but
maybe it's one of the.
I think maybe.
What is the pink ones that do like New York Vet?
That girl.
No. They do
it's
like
not,
New
it's
York
not,
Vet.
No, it's something.
CBC, those kinds of people.
Yeah,
okay.
It's something a little bit different. Anyways, but I'm excited to go to that.
Nonetheless, 2020, everyone was kind of very much quarantined and kind of shut in, if you will. We did a lot of digital and virtual learning in the veterinary industry, and so
which will continue probably
are going to continue to do that, but they're also out. So as I shared last week, my family was on vacation in Key West, and in one of the resorts that we were staying in, we were sitting around the hot tub and these two 14-year-old girls come and they ask, like, hey, can we sit with you guys? And we're like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, like they were very outgoing kids, which I would have never been. I would have never walked up to a hot tub full of like 8 to 10 adults.
People, especially with adults. Yeah,
and been like, hey, can I sit here?
Hey, do you mind if we,
Never, ever, ever would I have. But these girls were very outgoing. They were super nice. We started talking to them and they live in Boca Raton. They were vacationing in Key West as well. And then we talked to them about school and that kind of thing. It was kind of a short but long conversation. We learned a lot. But the one little girl, she's like, I mean, coronavirus is like practically over. And it was just like,
okay,
hysterical, but also like that's truly how people feel.
Yeah.
And so it's very apparent because we've talked about like our boarding numbers have increased, like pets are being boarded with us.
While families go on vacation. Yeah. Yep.
Our staff is asking for time off, which basically nobody took time off last year.
Right.
They were given a lot of time off because we had those rotational 3 days on, 4 days off, that kind of thing. But nobody took vacations, you know, left the state, the country, anything like that. So it's just interesting. I'm super happy to see things kind of quote unquote returning to normal.
But it's going to be a process because you and I talked about this coronavirus, I feel like for 4 to 6 months before everything exploded in the U.S. We talked about the
bat. Talked about it in January.
Yeah, we're talking. And then all of a sudden, we as a nation get blindsided.
Yeah.
And all this instant information, you know, coronavirus on day three, 238,000 deaths. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, like, March 11th is when President Trump said, like, we've got a problem.
Yeah.
And then March 20th of 2020 is when we closed our doors to the public.
Yeah.
And then from that point forward.
And then all these, quote, unquote, super important people who, you know, are the coronavirus leaders.
Task force.
They're out there giving their opinion and they're telling you what you should and shouldn't do. And tomorrow they're saying something different. And the next week it's something different. And, you know, you're just thinking, you know, Dr. Fauci, you're very, very smart. You're very intelligent. And you really helped us through the AIDS epidemic problem crisis.
Deborah Burke was through that, right?
But yet, you know, why haven't we gotten this thing figured out? And the reason is there's really not an answer out there. It just needs to happen and continue, and we need to all get through it. So
yeah,
anyway,
I think we're slowly. Yeah, you're on a.
I'm on a tantrum, I guess. Yeah. But the point I'm going to try to make is it's not going to just say nobody is going to say tomorrow back to normal. It's going to be a process.
Yes.
I was in Home Depot multiple times this weekend because I had a big backyard project going on. And I would say probably 20% of the people in Home Depot, of the customers, were not wearing masks.
Okay. Which I would say mid-pandemic, so this time last year, there were still people that weren't wearing masks.
Anti-maskers,
but it was like 1%. And those people were being asked not to come into the store. And then it got into like this giant fight.
Yeah.
And then the workers were asked not to engage, basically. So I think it will be a transition as well. Like I said, I'm excited for the transition. I'm excited to kind of see what holds, as we've talked about before. Like, what do we stick to? What do we keep? Like, our curbside, that kind of thing. We'll probably always be here, but...
Probably, but it's going to go down to one or two spots, I think,
transition.
For curbside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've already transitioned away from video conferencing people into the exam room because it's not efficient for us.
It's not efficient any longer.
It was. We were all very scared. We were trying to do the right thing, but now it's not the most efficient or the best way to do things. And so... it's going to be really interesting, right? So once the doors are, quote, open for everybody across the nation, there are going to be consultants in our industry that start preaching how to open your doors back up.
Of course,
when
of course.
We are the ones figuring it out here on the front line.
So, you know, what's interesting, similar but different. As I said, my family and I, we vacationed, and we actually drove through the Florida Keys. And so on U.S. Highway 1, all the way down, there's animal hospitals littered across the interstate, right? So there's like one in Key Largo, there's one in Marathon, and you can see them. And a lot of them still have like signs out that say that they're curbside care only. And I think that's very interesting because people have been vacationing to Florida for a long time. Do you remember this time last year when all the spring breakers went there and there was like the big...
Yeah.
Outbreak and
super
ordeal.
Spreader event. Yeah, they call them.
So, I don't know. We still oftentimes do get that like 1-2% of our clients that have kind of an issue with the way that we're functioning right now. But
so
still, this is the way that the majority of the veterinary community is still functioning. And we're taking
and we do have
P's and Q's from the organizations that...
our parent organizations, yeah. our state, you know, we're not just winging this, but I have recently gotten in the conversation with multiple clients, you know, when are you going to open the doors? When are you going to do this? And I've told them I'm ready to do it now, but some of my staff is not, and many of our clients are not.
Right.
And if we're 50% curbside and 50% letting people in, we're going to become even more inefficient.
Of course.
Because now, you know, call when you get here. Okay, Ms. Smith, we'll be out to spot one. So technician has to go out, talk to Ms. Smith in spot one, escort Ms. Smith in the room, make sure into the hospital, make sure she's wearing her mask. Now we go into room one.
Mm-hmm.
We take the history. We do all the stuff in the room. We check her out in the room. We escort her out of the building. That doesn't seem like much. And, you know, maybe that will become our normal protocol, which mm-hmm. actually wouldn't be a bad idea to escort people in and out. That's awesome.
Which is what we've always done.
Chick-fil-A, you know, customer service.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if we're doing that and then we're doing everything on the phone, you know, part B for the other 50%, it just doesn't work for us right now. So we need to all get a little more comfortable and kind of let things pass, let a little more time go by before we get there. But I've talked in morning huddles and said, oh, we're probably going to open within the next 30 to 60 days. I've said that a dozen times. And so we don't talk about that internally, but I'm very hopeful by summer we will, if not be blended, be completely open up to people coming in into the hospital. But I predict that we're all going to want to wear masks moving forward. So.
Yes, I would agree.
Did you hear, you were gone this last week, but I could not Google and find the company or the restaurant that is no longer serving beef because of the greenhouse effect that we talked about a couple of episodes ago.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. I can try to look it up real quick.
So, yeah, try if you will. When I searched it, Wendy's came up because of a shortage of beef, but specifically a restaurant or a chain or a company, and I feel like it was a restaurant, was not going to carry or serve beef because of the whole greenhouse effect. Have you found it yet?
No, I Googled exactly what you're saying. And
it says Wendy's.
Yeah, because yeah. that was Wendy's in 2020, yeah. May of 2020. Do you remember? It was very much a, like, there was a beef shortage.
Yep.
Because obviously we didn't really know how things were happening. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't see this company that you're talking
okay.
about. We can certainly.
I know I heard it. So I just found that odd that we talked about it and this happened. So mm-hmm. Dr. Reese, this is your challenge.
Oh gosh.
Once again, to find out.
She's very good at these.
What I'm talking about that I don't really know what I'm talking about. So you mentioned OA.
In the last episode, yes.
The last episode, I forget what we're even talking about, but what does that stand for? This is our Healthy Pet, Happy Life segment.
We were
way.
Talking about Sadie coming
oh.
into your family,
yep.
yeah, as a senior pet and instantly getting started on meds for OA. And so OA stands for osteoarthritis.
What are some other synonyms for that?
Arthritis.
Arthritis, yeah.
Joint disease. I would say DJD.
Degenerative joint disease or DJD.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, arthritis.
What'd you just say?
yeah. Oh, people say that. Done got the arthritis.
Well, I mean, they're not wrong.
No.
Isn't there an I there?
Well, it's actually arthritis. But
so
osteoarthritis. And how would you best describe typical degenerative joint disease or osteoarthritis, what does that kind of clinically or maybe even visually, radiographically, what does that look like?
I don't know what you're asking. So
let's talk about osteoarthritis.
You might see a limp clinically
okay.
or at home.
Limp or lameness or pain.
Yep. And so typically it's kind of coming and going. It's not constant for most
what,
pets.
Where does it come from? What's the source of osteoarthritis?
You mean like the pain or like
yeah.
the inflammation in the joint there?
The
and
joint.
So you have
the
these
joint
like
is what I was going for.
Osteophytes or whatever that's kind of growing.
So it's joint pain.
It is joint pain.
Joint inflammation. Joint degenerative joint disease.
I'm like touching my elbow. Can you see
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you must have OA.
I don't have OA, but I'm thinking
about a joint. And so it's
joint
pain, inflammation, degeneration.
Okay.
What causes it?
Well, I just said osteophyte, but you looked at me weird, so it's not. It's like.
It's not the cause, it's the result.
Okay.
So maybe.
Breaking down of the synovial fluid or the lessening of it? Or...
So more general. So it may be the way you are made or put together.
Okay, so you're going to say so, genetics first.
Right. So genetically, you may have elbow dysplasia, hip dysplasia, or you may be the Boston Terrier or the Bulldog, not the Boston Terrier.
Or you could be like me and just play too much on your phone and get OA in your right thumb.
So the Bulldog or the Basset is what I was going for that has a lot of osteoarthritis in their carpus or wrist.
Sure.
Because of the way their forearms or their antebrachiums are formed, kind of throws them off mechanically and anatomically. It can be injury or trauma related.
Okay.
So cruciate disease, right? I feel like I'm seeing 4 torn cruciates a day for consult for TTA surgery. It's
That's
just
so crazy. Is it just, again, because you feel like people are paying attention or are there animals just out running amok?
People are paying attention. Animals are running amok. More animals coming into the practice. It's all of the above. And so if you have a joint instability due to a ligament tear or injury, then that instability, the body's not going to like it. It's going to start producing the osteophytes that you talked about, the extra bone. It's going to try to make the joint bigger to stabilize it. So that's very, very common. Infections could cause osteoarthritis as a secondary effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my point is osteoarthritis or degenerative joint disease is most often always secondary to a primary disease or problem or condition. So even if you have autoimmune...
So at this rate, it's kind of like a symptom, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's a secondary... Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's like itchy skin. Itchy skin is not a disease. Itchy skin is a result
of... So OA is technically a disease, but the way you're talking about it is it's kind of like a symptom it's a result of something else.
Primary autoimmune... Is it arthritis, I guess? It's called? I don't know.
I
mean, that would be the only time. Like, rheumatoid arthritis, again, still is the disease which causes secondary osteoarthritis. But so there's a little bit of maybe gray zone when we start getting into some of these autoimmune problems.
Some play on words there.
But what is our primary recommendation?
I was going to ask you.
What would we do if a pet had osteoarthritis?
So let's go back and say that someone brings their pet in for some lameness that they've noted. So
we're going to take a history. We're going to do the vet student thing. We're going to take a really good history.
Mrs. Smith walks in with her let's say 6-year-old mixed breed dog that's 55 pounds.
Yep. So we're going to get the signalment, right, which is the pet breed, age, sex.
Okay.
Probably missing something there.
Wait.
We're going to take a history.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheels are going to start turning and churning. And then we're going to do a physical exam. We're going to try to localize where the problem is. And then we're going to put all of that information together, kind of clinically reasoning, which
That's
some
a great
of us
word.
Do better than others.
That's a great word. Clinical reasoning skills.
And we're going to come up with a list of differential diagnoses.
Okay.
Right? And so we're going to think about this maybe looks and feels and seems like arthritis or osteoarthritis or OA or DJD or degenerative joint disease. And then we're going to say, what are we going to do about it? Do we need more information or do we not? And so oftentimes if we can localize the problem, which sometimes quite honestly, we can't, we have a limp or a lameness in a limb and we don't get pain or feel swelling or feel, excess laxity in a joint. But that's kind of the things we look for, but, we're going to try to focus on which joint is involved. We're going to oftentimes image that joint to see, can we confirm our diagnosis? Can we determine the degree of damage,
mm-hmm.
which oftentimes helps us with therapy. So ultimately, we're going to get to therapy, right? So if it's a torn cruciate, and we simply put that animal on an OA, non-steroidal, we're going to make the animal feel better, but we're not going to fix the problem as well as we should.
Sure.
If it is hip dysplasia, moderate to end stage, and an older pet to where maybe a hip replacement is not indicated or would not be accepted, we might look at anti-inflammatories, and we might look at joint supplements such as Daziquin Advance, which we recommend.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, we could go down the road of medial patella luxations, which need surgery, the cruciate deficient stifler knee ultimately needs surgery, and anti-inflammatories and joint supplements. And so we just kind of put all that together. And so...
So a lot of it's kind of like people, right? So you are going to take the history of the pet, right? And it's kind of their lifestyle, their age, and all of these other considerations into thought when you, and obviously their disease, when you start putting together a treatment. So if it's like a 4-year-old dog that doesn't have a torn cruciate, you're going to start talking about maybe let's fix let's treat the symptoms now, and then let's continue on a product like Daziquin Advance to help prevent further issues like this.
Yeah, let me just interrupt. The whole reason about talking about, usually there's a primary inciting cause.
Mm-hmm.
If you just treat the secondary effects and don't address the primary cause, if it's there, you're not going to be successful. And so, again, my dog is limping. I read on the internet that Remedil is a great product. Yes, Remedil is a great anti-inflammatory, and it will help your pet. But if your pet has a torn cruciate, Remedil alone is not going to fix your pet.
But I guess where I was going with that, right? So obviously if your pet is lame, you should bring it to the vet. And then you and the vet will have a discussion, obviously based on history, the age of the pet, the injuries or disease that are there, and kind of come up with a treatment. And no one treatment is the same for every pet.
Exactly. That's why we don't, you know, take a phone call. My pet's limping. Okay, I've got the magical drug to prescribe. Boom,
exactly.
Your pet is fixed. And
exactly.
So it's a partnership, right?
Yes.
I have these patella consultations, these cruciate consultations, these hip dysplasia consultations. In the end, I wind up always saying, I think I'm repeating myself here, like, this is a partnership. All of our goal, your pet, myself, and you, our goal is to get your pet better as quick and, I don't know, pain-free as we can. So, So we use a lot of Daziquin Advance as our primary nutraceutical, quote-unquote, joint supplement to help.
Are we still recommending, like, fish oils as well? Or that there's
a
lot of that,
you know,
in the Daziquin Advanced?
I have not. And fish oils are a good product. JD or Mobility Food by Hills is still really, really good. It's super, super high in fatty acids compared to what you would give normally for skin disease.
So, like, my dog Tovin, who's 3 years old, since the day he was born, he'd been, like, in his morning breakfast, I just toss him an omega fatty acid supplement.
That's great. I mean, it's good for free radical scavenging, for inflammation, and for joints, for sure. We use a lot of Remedil as our non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. We usually are going to recommend Galliprant as a recommendation for an older pet or a pet with either known or possible underlying kidney or liver disease, because it tends to be metabolized a little bit more so. We use laser therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Once we know which joint's affected, we know, again, what is the disease process? What is the severity? Clinically, how are they doing on what we're prescribing? Do we need to add laser? Do we need to add acupuncture? Do we need to add massage therapy, physical therapy? So, yes, no single answer really for any of these orthopedic diseases.
Fits for every single dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or cat, in that matter.
All right. So we talked about zero news stories over the past 2 weeks, because really there was nothing newsworthy, in my opinion. Hopefully,
Like little things, right? So, like,
did you have one more story?
There was apparently like a demon chihuahua that got adopted, but I feel like it's similar to like last year mid-pandemic. There was like this, I guess, devilish cat that was adopted. And so basically what they're doing, and these rescue groups are very smart in regards to getting out on social media, kind of going viral, and then finding someone who will take on that task.
I'll take that challenge.
So, and most oftentimes most oftentimes, pets just need a specific environment, right? So it's not like they can go into a household with 18 other pets and four small children if they have these known issues. They need to go into a single pet household, and finding someone who likes animals but only wants one. It's probably a little bit more challenging than
what
finding
is the individual
someone.
Fix for that particular individual. What is the environment? What is the lifestyle? And it, so, again, it's back to the whole OA discussion we just had. Every case is different.
Yep, exactly.
Use your clinical reasoning. Do not diagnose a juvenile pet disease in a geriatric pet. Right? So don't diagnose panosteitis, hypertrophic osteodystrophy, some of these other things that are in juvenile, young, growing animals in a 13-year-old lab. Not going to happen. Use your clinical reasoning.
Gotcha.
So,
I don't know who you're talking to. If you're talking to
I'm
like
just
the general
preaching.
Public
I'm very,
like
very
this,
preachy
those,
the last
those
two
random
episodes.
Vet students that might be listening.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Could be.
Or those Dr. Googles out there. So, nonetheless, do find a veterinarian that you can trust and that you feel like you have a good partnership with, because as we've said multiple times, taking care of your pet should be a very symbiotic relationship, I guess is that one?
Yeah, totally agree.
Between the veterinarian and the pet owner. So.
And the pet. I mean, the pet owner and the pet should be a very awesome relationship.
Of course. Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. And please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And lastly, remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.